December 2014, Chicago. Matt Maloney is sitting in the Grubhub office. The Midwest winter wind is howling outside. Snow already covers the ground. He runs his fingers through his brown hair and sighs. It's been a busy year. His first as CEO of a publicly traded company. Maloney looks up. His co-founder, Mike Evans, is at the door.
Hey, Mike, what's up?
Evans holds up his phone.
Did you see this Amazon news?
No, what's going on?
Evans starts reading from an article.
This past week, Amazon quietly launched online takeout and delivery via Amazon Local. The service only appears to be live in Amazon's hometown of Seattle for now, but you can be certain that the company has much larger ambitions.
Evans slumps down into a chair in front of Maloney's desk. Maloney looks at him.
Amazon already has the infrastructure. If people start using them to order food, we're screwed. Yeah, and it's not just them. Uber's expanding its meal delivery program. Postmates just announced they've completed 1 million deliveries. DoorDash is raising more money and growing like crazy. They're still small compared to us, but they're gaining ground.
Maloney purses his lips. Evans is right. Their company Grubhub does have a decade of experience and arguably the best website and most popular food ordering app. But it has a weak spot. They still don't do their own deliveries. They're just the middleman between restaurants and customers. And their competitor, Uber, is forging the bridge between them. Uber's huge fleet of independent drivers gives them a major advantage. And then there's Postmates. That company is prime for growth. They're a shiny new toy, and their mobile-friendly platform is seductive to investors. Maloney shakes his head.
We got to do something before they can catch up to us.
Evans looks out the window, then back at Maloney.
So, what do we do? We're going to have to do delivery too, but we don't have time to build a network of drivers from scratch. So we're going to have to buy them. What do you mean?
We're going to have to acquire the ability to deliver.
Evans smiles and nods. This is a genius idea. They have cash on their books thanks to their recent IPO. They can afford to spend what they need to grow. Maloney calls his assistant.
Hi, can you put together a list of regional delivery apps we can acquire?
Maloney and Evans know that even though they're the biggest contender, they're under threat from Postmates, DoorDash, and Uber Eats. It's deliver or die. Within a few months, Grubhub acquires 2 new companies, Dining In and Restaurants on the Run. With competitors nipping at their heels, they had little choice. Grubhub had to join the delivery game to stay on top or risk flaming out. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In our last episode, Tony Hsu started DoorDash in an effort to help small businesses like his mom's Chinese restaurant. German-born Bastian Lehmann launched Postmates to deliver furniture before pivoting to food. Grubhub founders Matt Maloney and Mike Evans decided local pizza should be as easy to find online as apartments. And Uber's Travis Kalanick recognized that food delivery was the next logical step in his empire. Now, we're picking up with all four competitors looking to win the golden meal ticket. Getting too big to beat. This is episode 3, Deliver or Die. Spring, 2015. A tiny Italian restaurant in New York City. It's a busy night in the kitchen, but the front of the restaurant is almost empty. That's because the restaurant owner recently signed up with DoorDash. The company just launched in the city, and it's been taking off. The owner sits at one of the empty tables, quietly doing his accounting for the month.
Hi, I'm here to pick up a DoorDash order for Sarah.
The restaurant owner hands over the bag and goes back to his numbers. But something isn't adding up. He looks down his glasses and squints at the bottom line. That can't be right. And then he realizes it's the DoorDash commission eating into his profit. DoorDash is charging a 20 to 25% commission fee on every single order. He starts to look closer. DoorDash gobbled $6 of a $32 food bill. Panic is slowly rising as he examines the other delivery orders. There's one from Grubhub. For that website, the restaurant owner has a choice in the percentage fee, anywhere from 12.5% to 20%. The more he pays, though, the higher up his restaurant appears in search results. Right now, he's getting a flood of orders, but he's paying a 17.5% commission. And he just can't afford it. On to the next page. Postmates. They're charging similar fees. His staff has been complaining about the lack of tips. When people dine in, they leave a tip that gets split between the servers and cooks. But with delivery, there's no tip for the in-house staff, and no one orders drinks, a crucial moneymaker in an industry known for its slim margins. Thanks to these food delivery apps, this Italian restaurant is clocking more orders than ever. But without the owner realizing, the delivery services have been killing his small business. And the drivers aren't happy either. June 2015. A room in San Francisco's Civic Center. On one side of the room, a crowd of Uber executives and their lawyers are gathered for a very important hearing. On the other side is an Uber driver. Well, former driver. She's suing the ride-sharing app for refusing to cover mileage and tolls. Uber, meanwhile, argues that because she's an independent contractor, not an employee, those costs are her responsibility. California's labor commissioner clears his throat.
All right, I've made my decision. This driver should be classified as an employee of the company. Uber is involved in every aspect of the operation, from vetting drivers and their vehicles to setting rates for trip fares, and is therefore legally an employer of its drivers. I hereby order Uber to pay her $4,100 to cover the costs of vehicle mileage and tolls for the 3 months she was driving for Uber.
The Uber executives are aghast. This is bad. Very bad. Uber's profit model relies on not having to pay its drivers health insurance or job-related expenses. Uber argues it's not an employer, just an app that matches passengers with rides. The company is facing several lawsuits over similar employee issues across California, and this ruling sets a precedent. If they're legally required to pay drivers and cover their costs, not only will that hurt the bottom line, but it could affect their valuation. The Uber ruling also has major implications for Grubhub, Postmates, and DoorDash. If they can't classify their drivers as contractors either, they're in trouble too, especially DoorDash.
The other companies have recently benefited from the flood of venture capital in the past year and a half, which boosted their stock price. But DoorDash is in the middle of raising money to fund its expansion. This ruling could make potential investors very nervous. DoorDash figures the best bet is to get out in front of this by closing a funding round as soon as possible. Fall 2015, Palo Alto, California. Tony Hsu walks into a conference room at a venture capital firm. Across the table are two investors, dressed in the Silicon Valley uniform of dark jeans and puffer vests. After some pleasantries, Hsu makes his pitch.
DoorDash started off 2015 with just four markets, and over the past 12 months, we've added another 18 markets, including two in Canada, for a total of 22 markets covering more than 250 cities.
The investors nod along.
Now, we're seeking to raise $100 million at a $1 billion valuation.
One of the investors raises his eyebrows.
But what about these lawsuits that want to classify your contractors as employees? Won't that raise your labor costs?
Hsu looks at his notes.
We're convinced we'll be able to win these legal battles and continue using our existing business model.
The investors, however, are not convinced.
I'm sorry, Tony. I love you guys, but I just don't think we can buy in at this price. The market is so saturated. I mean, between you, Postmates, and Uber Eats, we're not looking to back any more food delivery businesses.
Hsu isn't ready to give up yet.
But we aren't just a food delivery business. In the past year, we've teamed up with 7-Eleven so people can add grocery store items to their DoorDash orders. We're a logistics company.
Yes, and so are Uber Eats, Postmates, and Amazon.
Hsu's face falls.
But when we talked in the fall, you were interested.
I know, but the market has changed. We would still put money in, but not at a $1 billion valuation. We'd invest closer to a $600 million valuation like your last round.
Hsu gathers his notes. The investors are still willing to give him money, but he feels like they're undervaluing his company. They don't see the potential for growth and improvement.
Well, thank you for your time.
They shake hands and Hsu walks out. But beneath his calm exterior, he's shattered. Hsu calls his co-founder and CTO, Andy Fang.
Andy, they turned us down.
Damn it. What are we going to do?
Hsu thinks for a second.
We need to show them that we're not like these other companies, that we can guarantee a profit.
Fang waits patiently for Hsu to lay out his plan.
We need to go back to our roots. All our competitors are focused on cutting costs for the customers. We're going to focus on the restaurateur. You know, the small businesses we wanted to help, like my mom's.
Okay, well, so how are we going to do that?
Rather than making it cheaper for the consumer, we're going to increase sales for the restaurant. We're going to get a greater selection of restaurants, more than any of the others. And we're going to get them loads of orders.
You make it sound simple.
It is. If we stick to our guns, we're going to win. I promise you.
Fang isn't convinced, but he trusts Hsu. A greater selection of restaurants could help attract more users and drive down costs. If they can do that, they can get investors back on board. But some of their tactics aren't exactly what you'd call above board. Late 2015, San Francisco, DoorDash headquarters. A meeting room is full of new Dashers, company jargon for delivery people. They're holding clipboards and signing papers. Some are already clutching the big red insulated bag they'll be using to transport food. The Dashers settle into their seats. On the screen in front of them, a training video starts playing.
DoorDash, delightful delivery. Introduction to DoorDash.
The video walks through the basics, what DoorDash does, how the DoorDash app works. Then the video talks about payment for drivers. DoorDash won't be paying for gas or any other car costs. That's on the driver. Next, the video explains there are partner restaurants, meaning restaurants DoorDash has contracts with,
and non-partner restaurants. These are establishments where DoorDash doesn't have an established relationship, but drivers can still pick up orders. And then, the video lays out a protocol that raises some eyebrows.
Do not use the word DoorDash in a non-partner restaurant. There's no need to mention DoorDash in these cases because not all the staff know that we don't have a relationship with a restaurant.
Some of the Dashers take notes, others nod along. It seems innocent enough, but this instruction is pretty noteworthy. DoorDash has been coming under fire for listing restaurants on its website and app without permission. Many of the restaurants refused a DoorDash partnership because of the high fees. It's a tactic DoorDash shares with Postmates, which has been doing the same thing and has also been taking heat from restaurants. Sometimes DoorDash and Postmates list items at a higher price than the restaurant's own menu. So angry restaurateurs demand Postmates and DoorDash remove them from their service. Fed up, In-N-Out even files a lawsuit against DoorDash, claiming that even after In-N-Out asked to be removed, DoorDash is still listing it on its app. While those services battle it out with restaurant owners, Grubhub continues its shopping spree. It buys a restaurant delivery service called Delivered Dish, making its delivery footprint even bigger. And that's a problem for DoorDash, because it's already working overtime to attract customers. And now, it's facing more competition than ever before. Los Angeles, March 1st, 2016. It's a brisk, sunny day on Fairfax Avenue. A driver in a black Prius pulls up to the familiar red building with white cursive letters that spell out the name of the popular deli, Cantor's. It's lunchtime, and the line to order stretches to the door. But the driver skips the line and walks right up to the counter.
Hi, I've got an Uber Eats order for Sarah.
Coming right up.
The woman behind the counter hands the driver a brown paper bag with a receipt stapled on the outside. He gets back in his car. His app gives him directions to Sarah's office down Beverly Boulevard toward one of the many office blocks in Beverly Hills. As he approaches, Uber Eats alerts Sarah. She heads downstairs to the front door.
Sarah?
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
The driver gets back in the car and looks at his Uber Eats app. Sarah paid a $4.99 delivery fee in addition to the cost of the sandwich. But then his eyes get to the tip line. He frowns. No tip? But she seemed so nice. He's not happy. He only gets paid for the distance between picking up the food and delivering it to Sarah. For that, he receives a few dollars flat payment plus a certain amount per mile. Cantor's doesn't fare so well either. Uber takes a big bite, 25% of the deli's tab. Even though it might be a raw deal for the drivers, Uber's advertising makes it sound like a great opportunity for restaurants.
Now that we're delivering with Uber Eats, our business has grown so much, and it's just like found business.
To put it bluntly, they do real numbers.
With just Uber Eats, we're probably doing about 100 deliveries a day.
I couldn't ask for a more trustworthy partner. They got the logistics game on lock because we all use Ubers to get everywhere in the world now.
A year ago, Uber started slowly with an option focused on selectivity, only offering a set menu from one restaurant at a time. But CEO Travis Kalanick quickly realized that Uber Eats had huge potential and directed his team to build out a separate app. Now, as a standalone app, Uber Eats is playing to win. In 2016, food delivery is still a very small part of the overall restaurant economy, representing less than 10% of its sales. As more and more platforms chase customers, delivery sales are on course to explode. But restaurant owners won't be toasting their fortunes. Far from it. In April 2016, about a month after the official launch of the Uber Eats app, Kalanick learns just how far his new venture has to go to catch up. Postmates' financials are leaked to the press, and they show that the company is making massive inroads. Their revenue grew sixfold in 2015. By now, Postmates is fulfilling 1 million orders a month. Then, they roll out Postmates Unlimited. Instead of paying for individual deliveries, users pay a flat fee of $9.99 a month for unlimited delivery. And folks quickly sign on. Postmates and Uber Eats are revving their engines. But Uber will leave them in the dust when it signs up America's favorite restaurant.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. December 2016, Miami, Florida. It's a balmy evening, and a light breeze is swaying through the palm trees. An Uber Eats driver glances down at the black insulated delivery bag in her front seat. She's just got her first order of the night, and she's rushing to get it there quickly. Uber was recently authorized to operate in Miami, and the nightlife-loving city is buying in big time. But it's still early, and ride requests are only trickling in. So the driver's picking up extra work delivering food instead of people. A familiar golden arch comes into view. This can't be right. She checks her GPS and cranes her neck to look out the window, and slows to make the turn. No, this is definitely right. She pulls up to the intercom.
Hi, I'm here to pick up an order for Uber Eats for Gary.
We'll be right with you. Just pull up to the next window.
She leans over to grab the brown paper bag covered in red and yellow writing. Then she tucks it into her insulated bag. This is her first ever pickup from McDonald's, and it won't be her last. Uber Eats just launched their first major restaurant chain partnership with McDonald's in Miami, and it's a game changer. Postmates has Chipotle. DoorDash has Wendy's and the Cheesecake Factory. But McDonald's is bigger than all of them, with close to 37,000 locations and more than $24 billion in annual revenue. With McDonald's, Uber Eats sees orders skyrocket close to 30% in Miami. Sure, some of the orders are for a few dollars worth of food, and Uber Eats ends up losing money on them. But the company is gaining critical mass by adding users. Uber Eats is becoming a go-to for hungry, impatient customers across socioeconomic strata. After a successful test run in Miami, Uber Eats expands the company's partnership with McDonald's nationwide. And slowly, it begins to claw market share away from Grubhub and DoorDash. Uber Eats remains under the firm command of 37-year-old Jason Droege, one of founder and CEO Travis Kalanick's proteges, who led the company's food delivery project from the start. But Uber is undergoing unprecedented turbulence, even for Silicon Valley. By June 20th, 2017, the board makes a bold choice. Kalanick, their infamous bad boy leader, who's come under fire for various misdeeds, is forced to leave. An older, more subdued figure, Dara Khosrowshahi, replaces him. No one knows whether this new CEO will be able to rehabilitate public perception of Uber, and by extension, Uber Eats. Right now, that's anyone's guess. February 2018, downtown San Francisco. A courtroom is packed with journalists, Grubhub executives, and some delivery drivers. They've gathered to hear a ruling that could change their futures. U.S. Magistrate Judge Jacqueline Scott Corley starts talking.
I have decided that this driver does not qualify for the protections of employees under California law.
Grubhub executives have to keep from clapping their hands. Corley continues.
If Mr. Lawson is an employee, he has rights to minimum wage, overtime, expense reimbursement, and workers' compensation benefits. If he is not, he gets none. Based on what the court observed at trial and the facts found, the court finds that during the 4 months Mr. Lawson performed delivery services for Grubhub, he was an independent contractor. Accordingly, judgment must be entered in favor of Grubhub and against Mr. Lawson.
The drivers are devastated. Drivers have been saying that even though they're working essentially full-time hours, they aren't getting any benefits, and some are barely making ends meet. Others say they haven't been earning enough to cover repairs on their car or to make the gas money on the trip worth it. This decision is a huge deal, especially because of the state it's in. California has high standards for establishing workers as independent contractors. This is the first time a judge has ruled in the company's favor, not the employees, and it sets an important precedent. If Grubhub can continue to convince California judges that its drivers are contractors, not employees, then it will probably be able to do so across the rest of the country, too. The lawsuit also spells a win for Uber Eats, Postmates, and DoorDash. DoorDash has been gradually picking up steam as it signs more and more restaurants onto its service. In August 2018, DoorDash goes back to investors, showing off the fruits of its new strategy, and raises $250 million at a $4 billion valuation. It's proof of how successful Shu's model of prioritizing restaurants over customers has been. But DoorDash isn't the only one seeing gains. Postmates is on the rise, thanks to its celebrity fans. It's June 2018, and Kylie Jenner, the youngest member of the Kardashian-Jenner family and one of the most followed people in the world, is hungry. She orders Postmates again and again while on a photo shoot. In total, she places 5 orders in one day. Postmates executives are ecstatic. The company has her share her Postmates receipts on their blog. She spends $10,000 on Postmates in a year. A few months later, in September 2018, Postmates raises $300 million in a deal that values it at $1.2 billion. Bastian Lehman's little startup is officially a Silicon Valley unicorn. Meanwhile, Uber Eats focuses on restaurants with fast delivery. That strategy is winning over the young professional crowd, who prize speed over everything else. And while Postmates focuses on cool places like Sugarfish Sushi and Milk Bar, DoorDash's comeback is all about sheer volume. In December 2018, DoorDash overtakes Uber Eats to hold second place in total U.S. food delivery sales, behind Grubhub. But DoorDash will struggle to hold on to market share when Uber Eats decides to buy its way to the top. On the next episode, the delivery apps consolidate in order to grow, but a major California proposition threatens the business model of all the companies. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is episode 3 of Food Delivery Wars for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Natalie Robomet wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.